Now, more startling details emerged from the RHI inquiry yesterday, the 60th day of the investigation into what went wrong when the botched green energy scheme heard evidence from Seamus Hughes from the Department of the Economy. Newsletter's political editor Sam McBride has been following the RHI inquiry. Good morning to you, Sam.
Good morning, Jimmy.
Now, yesterday heard how at the point where Stormont officials were unaware that the RHI scheme was beginning to run out of control, they were exploring the possibility of introducing an even more lucrative tariff. Tell us about that, Sam.
That's right. This relates to a meeting or a conversation between Stuart Whiteman, who was the head of the Energy Efficiency Branch within Arlene Foster's then department. He was in talks or was in a conversation, at the very least, with Moy Park, with a senior figure there called David Mark. And in that conversation, he told him some information which was already in the public domain, and he also told him some information which it seems was not in the public domain. Mr. Whiteman has explained that, and he's going to be before the inquiry next week to explain this in person. But in a written statement, he's explained that by saying that this was part of policy development. It was right that they would consult with major stakeholders, as they would see it. But that was something which the inquiry was pressing Seamus Hughes, who was the subordinate to Stuart Whiteman, who was before the inquiry yesterday. They were pressing him on how common this was, that really members of the civil service would go out and pass out information which, as we now know with hindsight, if not at the time, was highly commercially significant. We know that Moy Park was a very significant part of the spike which then developed. So if we go back to February 2015, this is the point where the scheme is starting to run out of control, but people within Arlene Foster's Stormont department don't really know that, it seems, but the pressure is building on the budget. He has this conversation with Moy Park, and in that conversation, something which comes out of it is that Moy Park pick up that there is a plan for a district heating tariff. So this is a right. new rate within the system, and that would allow one very large boiler to be placed and lots of poultry sheds, for instance, or houses or any other eligible buildings to be run off this. But the key factor in this is that this would be a higher tariff, so it would be even more lucrative than what at that point was the highest rate, which was for quite small boilers. And the justification for that was that there was extra pipework, there was extra expense, there would be some heating loss through this extra pipework. But the key issue for the department, with hindsight, is that how on earth would they be able to afford an even more expensive tariff at a point where we now know their budget was, if not broken, was certainly heading very quickly to be broken.
Yeah. Just relating to that, let's hear from what was some of what was said yesterday here at the Inquiry Council. Joseph Aiken, he asked Seamus Hughes about the thinking behind that proposal, which would see the bigger RHI boilers getting a higher payment tariff. You'll also hear in this clip the Inquiry panel member and energy expert Keith McLean in this exchange.
That proposal there was for a particular tariff to encourage bigger installations. And the thinking would have been that whereby you were putting in, you know, smaller boilers, that someone could be grouped together and actually put in one big large boiler, be it for housing or, you know, whatever, but or commercial premises.
Was it going to be getting then a higher? Was it going to cost the scheme more than biomass tariff?
I think there was a 7 pence. I think it was 7 pence, but there was the size of the boiler was obviously bigger, so it allowed for the bigger installation. From memory now, I can't remember exactly from the document, but that was from the consultation paper from 2013.
And I'm just trying to understand the logic here. So instead of multiple 99 kilowatt boilers getting 6.3 pence, you were encouraging them to put in a bigger boiler.
Yep. With a district heating.
Water, and then to hydraulically link
the lot,
different
units,
places where it was going to be applied, and give them more money for doing that.
Yeah.
So what problem was that solving?
Well, it was solving your multiple boiler issue. I mean, you weren't going to have four or five boilers heating, you know, individual. You were going to have one big boiler heating, potentially a number of, and leading to a more efficient system.
So it's quite accommodating. It's giving people a more efficient system. They only need to make one application to Ofgem, and they're going to get more money.
Well, there was a marginally difference in the tariff rate, yes, I suppose.
It would have, in theory, helped there to be less gaming, but it was going to come at a, if I've understood it correctly, and it sounds from picking up on the technical assessor that I have, that it was going to cost the scheme more money.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah.
It was more generous, albeit it meant boilers might be more properly sized.
We would have been looking at it from the point of view of sizing a boiler and more efficient systems.
Because at this point in time, the fact that the tariff is too high isn't yet understood, if I've got your position correctly.
Yeah, that's correct.
The fundamental difficulty that I'm having with that is that your premise is I'm facilitating a more efficient scheme, which means effectively it will have lower costs, and I'm giving more money, which to me sounds like the rate of return that somebody would be getting out of that would be higher.
I think the reference to efficiency is more the efficiency of the boiler than the efficiency of the scheme.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's the problem.
Yeah.
It should have been about the efficiency of the scheme.
But it wasn't.
But it may not have been.
Yeah. Sam McBride, the suggestion of the people being unaware regarding the finances and the budget and where it was going, that I think is what people find really difficult to understand. It seems very obvious for members of the council now in this inquiry, but for people that were there at the time, they just didn't seem to know what was happening.
And I think there are two issues there. First of all, they thought this money was coming from Treasury, and one of the questions which the inquiry is pressing with lots of witnesses is, was that a factor in their thinking? Did they act more recklessly or with less caution because they didn't think it was coming out of their budget? Because we know that the moment they realised it was coming out of Stormont's budget, there was a big panic. There was no sense of panic at this point. And the second issue is really, and it was really striking from that clip there, Seamus Hughes saying that they thought they were solving the multiple boiler issue. So the problem with multiple boilers was that it was more lucrative to put in lots of small boilers and get a high rate of subsidy than to put in one large boiler if that was really what you needed. But to him, it seems that solving that issue was really extending the lucrative tariff to the big boilers. That certainly wasn't solving it in a financial sense for the department. It might have been solving it for the claimant, but it certainly wasn't improving things for taxpayers.
Sir Patrick Coughlin has been pretty incredulous at various points during the inquiry, and he was again yesterday. He didn't let us down here. He points out how pushing people to buy larger boilers but also paying them the highest tariff would mean they still got paid a fortune. You'll also hear in this clip Seamus Hughes and the inquiry counsel, Joseph Aiken.
Putting the 6.3 tariff on a 199 boiler is not going to do away with the multiple boiler problem as it stood. Because you're still going to pay 6.3, as Dr. McLean says, for your smaller boiler.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that.
All you're doing is encouraging people to go for the 199 boiler as it stands, or if they're going to combine smaller boilers, they should be in the one system.
Yeah,
it's not going to do away with the problem that you've been facing and Ofgem have been paying on.
No, but it was to encourage properly sized boilers. You know, if rather than somebody putting in 299s, they stick in what they really needed, a 120 or a 130 kilowatt boiler, to which was their.
Is that purely on the efficiency of the boiler?
Yes.
But they're still going to get paid.
Yeah.
If they put in the multiple boilers, they're still going to get a fortune compared to the one subsidy, aren't they?
I suppose.
And that's you haven't worked that out yet.
No.
Is the issue that's. At this point in time, we haven't got there yet. If you're, as I understand your evidence, is that
right.
Fair to you?
Yes.
Sir Patrick does not mince his words, Sam McBride. It's almost difficult to listen to that.
Yes, he's something of an open book, I suppose. He gives us a pretty clear insight into what his thinking is. There's almost a sense of points where we're getting a hint as to what's going to be in the report at the end, because he's very clear as to what he thinks about some of the evidence. That evidence actually then related to a second aspect where Stormont was at this point looking to change the tariffs in a way that would have made it more attractive to claimants. So not just the district heating rate, which would have been higher than any of the other rates, but then extending this limit for the most lucrative rate, which had been there until that point, from 99 kilowatt boilers up to 199 kilowatt boilers. Now, that was justified, Seamus Hughes said, because that was the situation in Great Britain. However, the critical difference is that in Great Britain, there were cost controls. This would really have been the best of both worlds for claimants. That's one of the reasons, perhaps, why Moy Park was so pleased at this. It would have meant that you would have been able to run your boiler round the clock with no limits whatsoever, but have double the size of boiler, which would be more efficient to run in terms of fuel and also slightly cheaper in terms of buying one boiler rather than two. So, I mean, it's a catalogue of problems here which are developing at a point where the department ought to, with hindsight, clearly have been urgently implementing cost controls rather than working on that. They were working on actually extending the scheme, making it bigger and
making it more attractive to people to want to apply.
Precisely.
One thing that has followed throughout the RHI coverage since the inquiry began is the communication and between departments and within departments and what conversations were being said. Sir Patrick expressed his shock again yesterday about how that department and the different departments were communicating with each other. Let's have a listen to this particular exchange.
It's almost surreal, I have to say, Mr. Aiken, the complete missing and lack of communication between not only this part of the department, but also finance as well.
Mm-hmm. I can't comment and won't comment.
Let's try as best we can to put some form of logic on it. We've now got this chain that Mr. Hughes has been sending through, and it goes to Mr. Partridge.
Yes.
Right. Now, it's not right. It's not consistent, because you've got the two bits in it, one with the Parker exchange and then the other further up that's suggesting it's a matter of profiling, of forecasting. Does Bernie Brancken never step into this at any stage and say, look, this needs to be sorted out?
Well, in fairness to her, this sequence was not part of it in March 2015. I'm just drawing it to your attention to explain what Sandra Thompson's reference to Jeff Partridge is.
I know that. All I'm asking is there is no email or other indication that anybody ever made the connection.
No.
No.
No, there isn't. There isn't.
Thank you.
Communication, conversation, Sam, it doesn't seem to have been happening quite often.
That's right. This all relates to an email which was sent from an official in the Treasury right at the very outset of the scheme, where he essentially explained to Arlene Foster's officials that this scheme would have a penalty for the department if they spent beyond their budget. So what really became one of the critical issues with it when it ran out of control, there was a warning in the system. And what the judge was incredulous about there was that some of the officials who were ultimately trying to piece together the budgetary rules in 2015 as it ran out of control, had received this email several years earlier. So, I mean, he was trying to piece together there that it wasn't just a lack of communication between departments, it was within the department, and in some cases it was someone who had got the email, whether they had read it or not, whether they had really understood it is a separate issue, but people who had this evidence.
Yeah, do you know what year that warning email was sent?
I think it was about 2011. It was certainly in the period where the scheme was being designed before it was launched at the end of 2012. So it was several years earlier.
Before launch.
I mean, ought to have been in the system, I suppose, and there is a TRIM system which the civil service uses where all of these key documents are filed away so that once people move out of the department, all of that ought to be available to the people who come in and take their place. But that, of course, was one of the problems here, that there was really a complete changing of the guard within this part of the department. The officials moved out, new officials came in, and there was a lack of communication, and that's one of the areas of debate as to how much was passed on, how much wasn't passed on. But whatever happened there, this clearly was forgotten.
Just finally, Sam, how does all of this reflect on civil servants at Stormont? It doesn't appear great.
It's dreadful from their point of view. I think some people might look at this and think this was Arlene Foster's department. There was a particular problem there. It was Jonathan Bell's department after her. There are obviously questions for her and for him as to what happened on their watch. But if we look at some of these officials, some of them came in from the Department of Regional Development. Some of them came in. Seamus Hughes came in from the Department of Agriculture. Some of them have gone and Fiona Hepper, who was a senior official, was now at the Department of Education. The idea that these were just officials who were not operating to best practice within Arlene Foster's department, but when they were in other departments, worked perfectly well. I mean, that's difficult, I think, to believe based on just human instinct as to what goes on within the system, and also the evidence from David Stirling, who was the head of the civil service. But some of the key problems here, such as not taking minutes, where he was saying that was really endemic across the entire devolved situation, where all of the departments, certainly under the DUP and Sinn Féin, he suggested, had this preference not to take minutes, and that was something which came up again yesterday. So really a picture of ministers and special advisors maybe not being curious enough, but huge problems down the food chain, where yesterday there was actually a suggestion from Seamus Hughes that really he and his boss, Stuart Whiteman, were almost making policy and communicating that at points to Moy Park, and where it hadn't even been cleared by the minister or approved by the department. So really huge questions there for the civil service, as well as for the for the politicians and the Assembly, which obviously failed to catch this in its scrutiny role.
More to come, I'm sure. Sam McBride from the newsletter, thank you very much. You can, of course, learn more about what's been happening and what's been uncovered from the inquiry so far by visiting the BBC Northern Ireland online news website. I would encourage you to do so, and you can follow all of the content on there, bbc.co.uk/ni news.